So let me just review a little bit what we have done. So far, what we try to understand is a low energy behavior of an interacting boson system. So let's remind you that for the free boson, we understand very well. That is the ground state, simply you're putting all the boson in the K2-0 orbital. The excited state is moving one boson, say, to the K1 orbital, where the energy for excitation will be the epsilon K1, which is K1 squared over 2m. Or you can move two boson in the K1 or K2 orbital. Then the energy will be the epsilon K1 plus epsilon K2. So those describe the low energy excitation. And I want to say that those low energy excitation can be probed, for example, by the neutron scattering experiments. We can send a neutron beam, okay, with the energy E initial and the momentum K initial. Then it scattered off the matter, say, like off this boson gas, then became the lose some energy and change the momentum. So this scattering, they dump some energy and momentum into the system. And this will be this excitation energy. And the excitation momentum. Okay. So I'm using this example to emphasize one thing, that when we think about a free boson system, when you do this neutron scattering experiment to probe the low energy excitation of this many boson system, we are actually probing a single particle behavior. Because you can see the energy momentum of the excitation is really just coming from the motion of a single boson. So not surprising that what we obtain is that using these neutron scattering experiments for the free boson, we see a single boson dispersion relation. I describe this, really try to set this as a contrast for the interacting boson. Yes?
This neutron, is it creating a phonon, or is it scattering off a phonon? Or?
Not off phonon. Here is a boson, but eventually will be the phonon. So what happens is that suppose at the beginning you have a ground state. The ground state means all the boson in the K equal to zero orbital for free boson. And when the neutron interacts with those boson in the K equal to zero orbital, it may excite one boson to the higher energy orbital. So dump some energy into the system and some momentum, and so the scattered neutron have a lower energy and a different momentum. And here I want to say that we can view this, the scattering for neutron, as if it's interact with a single particle. It moves a particle from a K equals zero orbital to some K non-zero orbital. So that is the free boson picture. So therefore, we can see that using these neutron scattering experiments, we are probing a single boson. We are seeing the behavior of the original boson. With this in mind, then we try to understand what's going on for interacting boson case. For interacting boson case, what we did is following. We first treat this boson occupation or this orbital as if we have this xk and pk as a collection of Hamming oscillator. Then we package x and k and pk into this complex k. And the complex K became a complex field, phi x. So therefore, the motion of this field phi x is like a collection of oscillators. And then without interaction, this x k p k oscillator frequency is just this omega equal to k squared over 2m. So therefore, we reproduce this dispersion relation. But after including the interaction, we find those oscillator is modified, and their frequency is modified. So those oscillator have this frequency, new frequency. And then, so therefore, the excitation corresponding to the excitation of the oscillator will have this kind of spectrum. In the small k, it's linear in k. So we can still do these experiments for the interacting boson. Then for the interacting boson, we will see this spectrum, a phonon spectrum. So in this case, we can excite those oscillators. You can view, we can excite those oscillators, you can see the phonon spectrum. The question is asked, is the phonon a new particle or is the original particle? So this is a little confusing. For the free boson, when you do these neutron scattering experiments, we can say that we are probing the original bosons. So now for interacting boson, especially for small k, they're very different from original boson. The dispersion relation is linear, not even quadratic. So it looks like we are probing a different particle. And here, that's what I'm emphasizing. The phonon actually is an emergent, a new kind of particle. It's not the original boson. It's really actually, we view the original boson form some kind of media. It is a collective motion of the media gave us this phonon. So it's, they are collective excitation, cannot be associated with a single original boson. But however, on the other hand, the dispersion relation for the phonon have the property that at low energy it's a linear, but at high energy, at high momentum k, it goes to k squared over 2f. So in a small k limit, this goes like vk, where the v is a it's a G interaction density over M square root. Okay. So this gave us a hint. For the very high momentum, those collective excitation more or less behave like original boson. So we can say they are original bosons. But for the low momentum, they are very different from original bosons. They basically collect motion. So this is a concept of a collective excitation. They are not associated with any single boson, but correspond to a collective motion of all the bosons. That gave us a phonon. That's what I want to emphasize here. So that's the one thing. Then another thing certainly is that for this particular case, the ground state have this, basically the ground state wave function, x1 to xn, actually is equal to constant. Basically equal to constant. Because every boson in the k to zero mode, so the wave function do not depend on the position of boson because it's k to zero. So the ground state wave function for the many body wave function is more or less constant. So that really means, as I discussed in the first lecture, the boson in this ground state have this random distribution. You know, any configuration is possible, and which about have equal amplitude. So kind of random fluctuating distribution. And this random fluctuating distribution gave us a linear dispersing wave. Or more precisely, we have this wave. As I described using this delta H. At a low momentum, we have a wave equation, delta H V squared partial X squared delta H. That is a wave equation we derived for this collective mode. So this is a Euler equation. So again, this just echo what I said in my first lecture. This kind of random quantum liquid distribution, or boson condensation, gave us a Euler equation that describes collective mode. And this collective mode correspond to a new kind of particle we call phonon. We cannot say phonon is the original boson. They are very different from, original boson, but new kind of particle we call the phonon. And certainly, this question, you know, there's many, many wave equations, like Maxwell equation, Einstein equation. And so there's the issue we are keeping in mind that can we find some kind of order which give us a Maxwell equation rather than Euler equation? So that is that's one thing you can keep in mind. We'll discuss this later. Okay, so this is this some kind of a point of view. And another thing I want to say is the following. I want to make a comment on the Casimir effect. You can see the ground states in a free space, the wave function is kind of like a constant. Okay. Suppose we add two hard walls in this boson gas or in this superfluid phase. We add two hard walls. Then this hard wall change this wave function. So this wave function, equal to constant will change into another wave function that's called tilt, which will be equal to zero if x I equal to the position of the hard wall, so like the big X equal to big X. Okay. So therefore, in this boson superfluid case, when you add a hard wall, the boson amplitude will be zero at hard wall, and the wave function modified, and energy will be modified. So that's very natural. Then the modified energy may depend on the separation of these two hard walls. So the ground state energy is modified, but this modified energy may depend on separation, and that's a Casimir effect. Okay. So therefore, it is very natural to think inside the boson superfluid because we have a media. We have a dynamics. We have a particle there. When you put a hard wall, put something which interact with bosons, we'll change the ground state wave function, we change the ground state energy. Very natural. But what is funny is falling. You know, using this language and this picture, it's hard to calculate the Casimir effect. You know, what is change of energy? It's hard to calculate. You know, you change the boundary wave, boundary condition, wave function, have to dynamize this big Hamiltonian with different boundary condition, that seems impossible. But in the oscillator picture, there's another way to look at it. So this is a look at the Casimir effect using original boson picture. But there's another way to look at the Casimir effect. Using this collective mode picture, using this collective mode, there's another way to look at the Casimir effect. Because the collective mode, we have this the zero point energy. You go to one half of this the collective mode energy. We have this zero. We have zero point energy. Huh? This is zero point energy because of falling. This omega k is a frequency of those harmonic oscillators. And in the classical picture, we say at zero, at the ground state have zero energy from harmonic oscillator. But for quantum theory, the harmonic oscillator really have a little bit of energy, which is one half of this frequency. Then when you insert these hard walls, the mode is modified. You know, originally, for example, let's consider this situation. Originally, between two hard walls very far away, we can have this mode, you know. But however, if we add a third hard wall in the middle, then the mode suddenly it changed into two parts, you know. So mode distribution became different. And since the mode have different distribution, this summation of zero point energy is modified. And that gives us another way to calculate the energy shift as we change A. And this is a standard way to calculate a Casimir effect. But however, certainly the more direct way to understand the Casimir effect is using the original boson. We have a boson superfluid. When you put a hard potential, well, the boson wave is modified, then certain energy is modified. But the simplest to calculate such modification energy is not using the original boson picture, but using the collective mode picture. Okay. So this reminds us about the Casimir effect in the vacuum. So it's really about whether photon is an elementary particle or collective mode. That's the issue. I think the one opinion is that the photon is an elementary particle, is one of the elementary particle in nature. But from this analog, you can see we may as well regard photon as a collective mode of some underlying media which form the vacuum. And so everything would work through. In particular, I want to emphasize that the existence of a Casimir effect really indicates that the vacuum itself is not empty. The vacuum is may better to be regarded as some kind of superfluid, some kind of media. When you add some metal in the vacuum, this underlying media is modified. That's where you give you a Casimir effect. Yeah. Okay. I don't know. Actually, I know there's a calculation for that. There's several theoretical work. Actually, one of my colleagues working for that. But I haven't followed up on the experiments. So whether one can observe a Casimir effect in what is happening, I think there must be some experiments, but I haven't followed that. But the experiments basically is on the liquid, in some liquid. And you can put the two boundary in the liquid and to see whether these two boundary have some interaction between them. Yeah.
And also, if the vacuum was made of something and photons were collective mode, would you still have constant speed of light?
No.
Probably not?
No, not problem.
Not problem?
Because the cutoff is, okay, this Planck scale will come into play. The multiplication is the omega k equal to ck. The multiplication could be the k squared. But however, the with the c. But however, maybe k and there's k times the Planck scale, KLP. So the correction is k times LP. LP is 10 to the minus 33 centimeter. And the wavelength of light is probably 10 to the minus, what, minus 4, minus, maybe minus, yeah, minus 4 centimeter. So there's a scale order of 10 to the 28. So if the accuracy was 10 to the 28, 10 to the minus 28, you will see the effect. And but actually this is a wonderful, pretty interesting, people try to observe the violation of the Lorentz invariance using some astronomical observation where whether some effect can be amplified. You can put some upper bound, what kind of correction you may have.
With the Michelson-Morley experiment, that was it.
No, it's not. Not it at all. And you can put upper bound, the things that I really use an example is to say that what is Casimir effect? How do you understand the empty vacuum have Casimir effect? In a superfluid, it's very simple. You put in hard wall, you modify the boson wave function, of course energy is modified. So that's a Casimir effect, because you modify the media. That's, yeah, okay. So this is one way to look at, so that's one thing I want to emphasize, that the phonon or this collective motion or density wave actually is an emergent new kind of quasi particle in this superfluid mode. So now let's go to the name. Why you call this superfluid? You know, I should call this a synergy breaking phase, because as I mentioned, this phase have boson condensation, the U1 symmetry is broken. So we can call this symmetry breaking phase. But the people routinely call this a superfluid phase, because this phase have a very special property that when the boson start to flow, it have no friction. And viscosity equal to zero. So why, you know? Okay. So to understand why a flowing boson can never stop. So let's try to understand what is flowing boson states. Okay. So now let's using this again using this occupation picture and the oscillator picture. Remember that for every orbital, it corresponds to an oscillator. And the boson occupation on this orbital corresponds to how high we excite this oscillator. Okay. For this boson condensed state, every boson is in the k equal to zero orbital. So that means only k equal to zero orbital is only k equal to zero oscillator get excited. Every other oscillator is not excited. If other oscillator is not excited, that means it's a phi k, which is a package of x and t, equal to zero, unless k equal to zero. Okay, so therefore, so these boson condensed states correspond to this phi k equal to zero if k not equal to zero, and phi zero not equal to zero, and phi zero not equal to zero means that oscillator get excited. And so xp is not zero, so it's not oscillating. And so the occupation is high, that means. And then this configuration really means that the phi x, when we repack that in the real space, is constant. Also, maybe to be more precise, it's the square root of density rho. Or you can add a theta, some phase. You could have some phase. So that's it. So now so this is a picture for if you put every boson in this k to zero orbital. So now let's put the boson in different orbital, put all the boson in the k1 orbital. Then follows, then we find plus I k equal to zero if k not equal to k1, because every other k have no boson, so oscillator is not excited. And only psi k1 not equal to zero. Because that particular oscillator is highly excited. There are so many bosons there. And then this means what? This means phi x is equal to square root of rho e to the I k1x. So therefore, we can see clearly that by putting boson in the different orbitals, we have a different correspond different field. And why this is important? Because this is a state which boson do not flow. This is a state where boson do flow. This is the flowing state. Every boson have some momentum or has some velocity, so every boson just move together, flow together. And such flowing states, it's described by, in our field theory language, it's described by this a plane wave, a uniform plane wave. So that's a flowing state. Okay. And so now let's say, why flowing states won't stop? And this is a particular state. Okay, so suppose we can have another state. Some boson in K1 and some boson in K2. Suppose only these two orbital objects. Then follow a similar argument. We find that the field configuration for this particular state is a phi x equal to p to the I k 1 x plus rho 1 square root of rho 2 e to the I k 2 x. It's a kind of cool memory. Simply because now the oscillator at the k 1 and k 2 are expected. Every other oscillator is not expected. So therefore, it's a field only contain k 1 component and k 2 component. Or you can do more general configuration. This is just one particular configuration, which is very helpful for us to discuss. Yes?
Last configuration is that also super fluid?
No, I don't say the super fluid. No, this is, I don't say the super fluid configuration. So let's put it this way. This is one phase of that phase. This is one of the excited phase. It turns out this particular excited is very important because the energy for such excited is very low, actually. It's very low in this state. So actually, it's playing an important role in flowing, in studying flowing of a pipe. This state is yet another excited state of this, about this ground state. But this state cannot have very high. And so the usually people don't discuss it, but I will discuss this more. This is not very much. So let's consider things in a pipe. Let's consider we have a pipe. So this is our x direction. And so we have this flowing space, flowing in x direction. So this particular state, if you think of x as a coordinate will go along the pipe, then this particular field would describe a flowing superfluid, a flowing boson inside this pipe. So now let's ask the question, how can such flowing state stop? How still can be stopped? And one thing we say is very easy. You just make, one way to stop the flow is to just to make K1 approach to zero. Just move them to zero, it will stop. But we cannot do so. Why? Because K1 is quantized, which is 1 times integer, which is 1 over R times integer. So this is R. K1 is quantized. So we cannot change K1 continuously to 0. Suppose we do want to change K1 continuously to zero, what's going to happen? Because when we're changing K1 continuously to zero, this field is no longer a smooth function around this circle. There will be a discontinuity somewhere. Okay. Remember, the energy have this term, 1 over 2m partial x phi epsilon square plus u phi epsilon square plus g over 2 phi to the fourth power. Okay, this is our energy. So if a phi have a discontinuity, this derivative would have a huge contribution, cause a huge energy. So therefore, if you do want to change K continuously, and despite this continuity, the energy landscape as function of K is actually, there's a barrier. So when K equal to this r, 1 over r times integer, this field is a smooth field. So therefore, this first term have no contribution. And this two term is minimized, you know, because we have a data sensor is minimized. So therefore, the energy is low. But if you change k between the two quantized value, the field cannot be continuous. There is a discontinuity, you cause big energy. So that's, there's energy barrier prevent us from changing K1 continuously to zero. So that's the one thing. Second is that, let's using this method. So we start with a state at K1, okay. And we move one boson after another to k to zero states. You know, we move some boson to k to zero states, you know. So that's the way to stop it flow. Okay. So then we are dealing with the wave function of this, this type of wave function. Not sorry, field. We're dealing with this type of field. It turns out that if you do so, you know, although the initial states and the final states have both have a low energy, the intermediate states, like when you move half a particle from a K1 to K0 orbital, this wave function have huge energy. Why? Because x value of the wave function is not a constant. It changes a lot, actually. You can see absolutely with this wave function, absolutely with this field is rho. Absolutely with this flowing field also rho. They both are rho. Remember, rho is chosen so that to minimize this potential term. So when when the density is equal to rho, this term is minimized. That's how the density was determined. Okay. But now, when you have this half at the K1, half the K to zero, then this will be like rho over two here, and there's a rho over two here. Okay, so total density will be rho. Then we have a problem. Because the sum of this wave function, when you take epsilon square, is not close to rho. Somewhere it's can be zero, because this one can be minus one, this one can be one, so it can be canceled. So somewhere density is zero. And the highest density is a two rho, actually. It's changing from zero to two rho. And then the potential of these two terms is such that in terms of phi epsilon square, the potential goes like this. You know, have a minimal at a rho. So if the density phi square changing from zero to two rho, you're no longer using the minimals. You know, in a lot of place, in a lot of region of space, the field is here. That's called big energy. So clearly that this configuration have a higher energy than this one and this one. And this is very important. The interaction here play a very important role. Without interaction, if you don't have this term without interaction, these two states, all these three states, there's no energy barrier. Only with the interaction we have energy barrier. Without interaction, you know, moving particle to here, you keep lowering the energy. So no energy barrier if you don't have any interaction. But if you do have interaction, as we say, that the energy became, this field theory description, there's energy barrier. So again, we couldn't, so that's a second, so this is a second scenario. First scenario, we want to change k continuously to zero, we cannot do so. Second, we can redistribute the particle from K1 orbital to K0 orbital, but in the middle, there's a huge energy barrier. Okay. So all I want to argue is that these states, So let's say the total energy have this kind of landscape. So these flowing states are here. And then for next flowing state, where K1 is another quantized state, value is here and another is here. So somehow this is a local, this kind of flowing state is a local minimum. That's the picture I try to paint. It's a local minimum. It's not global minimum, so there's a lower energy state, like this state has a higher energy than this one. But however, all this local change always result in a higher energy. When you make a large enough change, you can overcome a barrier, then you can go to next minimum. This flowing state is in the local minimum, is trapped there. So it's flow forever. Yes?
Photons?
Yes. That's a vortex we'll discuss.
Right, okay.
So that's the way I understand the superfluidity. It's not like a zero viscosity. When you construct a flowing state inside the pipe, the flowing state is already a local energy minimum. There's nowhere to go. It has to flow forever, unless there's a tunneling effect due to vortex. Yes.
So this is basic physics.
When you say something with high energy and it will stay there forever, you say, I don't believe you. There must be some effect for the system to decay into the ground state. The real stable state is a ground state. Those local metastable states are really not really stable. So then the question, so now we ask, after we're saying that this state will flow in forever, the next question is that actually don't flow forever. But what is the mechanism for this flow to stop? And we already see, actually, from this picture, it's a barrier, it's a tunnel effect. You can see this picture actually is a classical picture. You know, remember, in this picture, this is a picture for energy landscape of this classical field, phi. So as a classical theory, when a classical theory is trapped in the local minimum, it will stay there forever. It won't tunnel to anything. But we know that the phi will be quantized. So the phi will be like a quantum variable. So then this classical landscape really says that when you have classical landscape, there's an energy barrier, so there's a tunneling process to tunnel through the energy barrier to go to lower energy states. So the key point is that what is the lowest energy barrier? How to estimate the energy barrier? One way to estimate energy barrier is using this picture. We just redistribute this particle one by one, and then we calculate energy of this configuration and to see what is the energy barrier. And you can do so, but this is not an optimal one. There's a much lower energy barrier than this particular one. So it's like a mountain. You want to cross mountain range. You don't want to cross mountain range through the peak. You want to through a pass. So what is a pass? This is a mountain pass. Okay. And this mountain pass relate to the vortex. Okay. So that's naturally led to another issue, the vortex. So vortex is another type of excitation we call a topological excitation above the superfluid ground state. And a non-topological excitation has been discussed, just this. You know, superfluid ground state is this field, this collective motion field gave us this kind of collective excitation, phonon. So that's a perturbative non-topological excitation. So there's another kind of excitation in a superfluid we call the vortex. So what is vortex? So actually this picture will be very useful. So remember the superfluid here, the phi is this e to the is the square root of rho e to the I k1x. Okay. But however this k1x, k is k is quantized. N over R x. That means I usually use k 1 equal to n over R. A is integer, R is a radius. Then what is x over R? X over R is theta, n theta. So this is angle is theta. So in a polar coordinate, this field is just e to the n theta. N is integer. Okay. So now let's shrink the center of the make a hole smaller and smaller. And so make it smaller and smaller. But this winding for n cannot go anywhere. It's trapped. So at the end, we get this. So without hole in the middle, we get this kind of configuration, this kind of field configuration. And this field configuration is called a vortex. This is a vortex. So basically, it's a particular field. It's a particular configuration field. It has some energy. It's kind of a stable because in particular, if n equal to 1, that smallest one, this is very stable. Because this the boundary at infinity, the theta change, the phase change by 2 pi when you go around the vortex. The phase of a phi field change by 2 pi when you go around the vortex. And whenever if you make a small perturbation, this 2 pi winding number cannot go anywhere, so that's kind of stable. Okay. So what is the energy of this vortex? Okay. And this can be estimated very easily. So again, let's use polar coordinate. Okay. So partial x phi, what is this? This one goes like square root of r rho and 1 over r. Why? Because the phase changed by 2 pi. So if you go, suppose this is r. The phase of this field changed by 2 pi if you go around it. But go around how long? What's the distance of going around it? The distance you cover is 2 pi r. So when you're changing, when you shift the position by 2 pi r, the phase changing by 2 pi. So the gradient is 2 pi over 2 pi r rather than roughly 1 over r. So therefore this contribution is 1 over r. The potential contribution is minimal because this rho is chosen to minimize potential. So it still remains to be minimized, so we don't worry about that. But however, this one is non-zero. So that means the vortex have a higher energy than ground state due to this gradient term. It's diverged, you can see that. And then in two dimensions, so this is a one dimension. So actually, the total energy I should use it. So in three dimensions, I'm using this. So this really is three-dimensional superfluid, so let's do a three-dimensional integral. And then you'll see that this integration diverges. And there are two divergences. One is r equals 0 diverge, and those r equals infinity diverge. It's easy to see. Let's consider two-dimensional superfluid. It's easier to see that. For the two-dimensional superfluid, the integration is something like a dx squared. This gradient is some number times 1 over r, then square. You know, when you do two-dimensional integral of 1 over r squared, they have a log divergent at infinity when r goes to infinity, and those log divergent when r goes to 0. I have two divergences. One is called infrared divergence, another called ultraviolet divergence. The ultraviolet divergence when r goes to 0 is not really divergence. It can be fixed. Because we don't have to say rho is constant for r equals 0. So we usually have a FR here, where the FR have a shape that is zero, then go to square root of rho for large R. So therefore, the boson density is lower at the center of the vortex. So because of that, this term would have a FR square, naively, so let's say. So when alpha r equal to zero is cut off, the divergence for small r. So small r divergence is not really there, actually. And there is a very important length scale we call the epsilon here. Epsilon is a balance between this derivative term and this potential term. So I won't discuss here, it can be calculated. So that's, you know, if epsilon is too small, the contribution from here is too high. If epsilon is too large, then the contribution from here is too high. So in some intermediate epsilon, the contribution of both, some of the contribution from both them can be minimized. So you have a minimized energy for the vortex core. Okay. And however, the infrared divergence, this log R divergence, cannot be fixed. It's always there. Okay. So therefore, the vortex would have an energy of order a log of the size of a system divided by this vortex core energy with some coefficient. So this is the vortex energy. Just a log divergence, so that's L size of system. So one for large system, this is infinity. So the vortex is pretty costly, but it's less costly than this distribution. Remember, we have half distribution, half distribution like this. The energy for such a distribution actually is an order L squared, the volume, in two dimensions like a volume of system. So compared to this, the log L is much smaller than L squared. So the vortex have a much lower energy. Okay. And this vortex actually can help us to reduce the flow. Okay. So now with help of this vortex excitation, we can estimate, we can understand what is tunneling process, how the superfluid flow can be reduced. The idea is that we thread the vortex, say, through this pipe. Let's thread the vortex through this pipe. So let's imagine what's going to happen. When you go around this outside, the phi field, the phase change, delta, theta, can be 2 pi n. Okay. But if you go around the vortex, suppose we consider this a minimal vortex, the phase change here is 2 pi. Okay. So then that means if you go around the loop inside the vortex, the phase change is 2 pi n minus 1 because of the falling. Suppose let's do that. Let's go from here to here. The phase change is 2 pi n minus 1. Then we can go around the vortex to add 2 pi. That's giving him 2 pi n. But then this loop can be deformed into the loop, go outside the vortex, which is 2 pi n. And that's it. So therefore, when you have a vortex, the phase change of a phi for the loop outside the vortex, for the loop inside the vortex, differ by 2 pi, which is a phase change of the vortex. Okay, so now I can imagine, we first, at the beginning, we have vortex at this boundary. Okay, yeah, it's here. We have vortex in the inner boundary. So here is a 2 pi n at the inner boundary. And then this vortex starts to go through the superfluid, go inside the superfluid and move to the outer boundary. Then inside the vortex, the winding number became 2 pi, became n minus 1, actually. And when this vortex goes through this, then this 2 pi, n minus 1 winding number would occupy the whole cube. And then the superfluid flow goes one step down. The energy bearer for such vortex, the vortex energy is the diameter of the cube, d. So it's kind of like the delta energy bearer is like a log d over c. And this is much lower than this proposal. This proposal goes like d squared. For the thick pipe limit, the d squared is much bigger. Okay, so this is basically the tunneling of the vortex. Yes. Ah, that's a question. I don't know. Okay. First, that's a very good question. So let me answer this question in some different angle. Now the first vortex can never tunnel. Why? Because you can see, suppose we have a perfect circular pipe, we have rotation symmetry, and this angle momentum. So suppose we have this state. So what is the angular momentum of this state? Actually, the total angular momentum of the state is L equal to h bar, total number of particles times n. You can write down that immediately. You must ask why. Why is that? Because this e to the I n theta, it's kind of like a wave function for the single boson. And such kind of theta dependence means it's angular momentum for the one boson is h bar times little n. And this is a superfluid state where every boson occupies the same orbital. So every boson has the same angular momentum. So you just multiply total number of bosons give a total angular momentum. When you have a perfect circular pipe, angular momentum is conserved. So therefore, naturally means that although the vortex tunneling exists, but however, the tunneling here, the amplitude have some phase, and the total amplitude equal to zero. They cancel each other. And so this would help you to understand, answer your question. So we need to break rotation symmetry by creating some narrow, a narrow point in the pipe. Then it's easier for the vortex to tunnel in this narrow region. And then the tunneling vortex in different place have a different magnitude. So they won't cancel each other, mainly dominated by this single tunneling. Okay. So therefore, when that happens, then this vortex tunneling. Actually, this is one of the major effort to observe this quantum tunneling vortex in the superconductor. People have this quantum superconducting nanowire, it's very thin. Then to see whether this vortex tunneling would give this quantum superconducting wire some resistance due to vortex tunneling, because without vortex tunneling it's perfectly conducting, but with vortex tunneling you may have some resistance. But there's many other contributions of resistance like a contact resistance. So how to distinguish all different source of resistance is a little bit difficult, but many people are trying to see this. Okay, so. So here at last, I just want to emphasize that the vortex, the many body wave function for the vortex states is pretty complicated, but have this property. If you move one boson x1 around the vortex, then this wave function would change in phase 2 pi. That's what I emphasize. So why is to say this? Because remember, for the ground states, the many-body wave function equal to constant, basically. And that means for the ground state wave function, if you move the particle around any point by 2 pi, around any point, the phase wave function don't change. Okay. So this is by contracting this ground state wave function and the vortex wave function, I want to say that it's a particular modification of the ground state wave function, such that we pick a point, we modify the phase such that when moving any particle around this point, the phase wave function in 2 pi. That's a particular way to modify ground state wave function. When you modify ground state wave function in this particular fashion, you create a vortex excitation. I describe this because later we'll describe string condensation. This is a particle condensation. And in string condensation, there's a similar construction of vortex like this. There, you'll get a monopole. So the monopole corresponds to the vortex, but for the strings, not for the particle. For the particle, we have this vortex. Yeah. Okay, so I will stop here. So tomorrow, I understand there will be two class start at what, 10 o'clock? 10 past 10, okay. Start at 10 past 10. And so tomorrow, we'll start a new topic. Basically, it's a boson in the lattice. The boson in the lattice have another phenomenon. It's have a transition from the Seebeck fluid to the mod insulator transition. So we'll study the boson in the lattice and the superfluid mod insulator transition. And the superfluid mod insulator transition have been observed in its ultra cold atom system. So that's be related. And also using this boson in the lattice will prepare us to study the string condensation. We'll cover next week. Okay.